You're listening to Fresh Oil, a podcast that examines the human condition while coming to terms with the purpose of life.
You know, I had been working in the nonprofit sector for a number of years, and then jumped into the private sector and was working with a small consulting firm. I kept thinking, well, you know, I want it both ways. I want to be able to have something with values and mission, but yet I love what business does, what it can do, how it provides opportunities. And I started to read and learn more about something called social enterprise, also called social entrepreneurship, and sustainability.
Hello and welcome back to Fresh Oil with Billy Delaney. Today I have Mindy Kuth, a sustainability consultant and expert working out of Mexico currently, who's on the show. Mindy is a friend of mine and I have been a student of hers while working with her and learning from her when she helped a company I'm currently working with. So without a whole lot more to say or do, we're going to introduce Mindy Kuth and begin our interview. Are you ready? Let's go deeper with Mindy Kuth. Hello, Mindy. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fine, Billy. And many thanks for the opportunity to share thoughts with you and your audience on your podcast.
Well, thank you. Well, to bring everybody on board, this is a very bright lady that knows what she's talking about and has just heaps of practical experience in what she's talking about here. And we're going to have a lot of fun today. So I'm going to start off by asking Mindy to tell me a favorite story of hers about working in her youth.
Oh, you know, probably my favorite story of working in my youth is what I would consider my first real paying job. You know, I had done some babysitting before my first paying job that came at 15. Mm-hmm. But that mm-hmm. job was working, it was a government-sponsored program. It was called the Youth Conservation Corps. And that program took youth from different parts of Northeast Ohio and brought us together to do projects working in local parks. And so what that meant as a 15-year-old was that we were rolling up our sleeves, learning about what happened in the parks from an environmental perspective and doing projects like erosion control, lots of chipping of trails, taking care of trails, weeding. So it was a very hands-on project. It was a lot of hard physical work, but it also really gave me the opportunity to understand how working in the natural environment could help me understand what other parts of my life were linked to the natural environment, for instance, mm-hmm. my water source.
Yeah.
And also really have a greater appreciation for the cycles of nature and how we interact with them. So as a 15-year-old, it was really wonderful to have that opportunity. And also learn what it meant to work hard and, you know, 8+ hours a day in the hot sun.
In Northeast Ohio, that can be warm.
Yes, yes.
Well, it also sounds like the seeds of your sustainability career were getting a little bit of a planting in that situation as well by being in the metro parks or wherever and being around how things were working, because we do come from the notorious part of the country where the river went on fire.
Correct.
And that is definitely something I'll never get over in my life. Well, thank you for telling us a little bit about that. And one of the things on the show we always ask is a little bit of a lead-in like this, because it lets the audience know that Work tends to feature highly at a young age in all of the people that we interview. And it's always work that's outside of what would necessarily be considered today a comfort zone. It's real work. It's not in front of a computer terminal, although that can be real work. But this is physical work outside, experiencing life and being tired at the end of it in heart and limb and mind. So, as you know on the show, we look at the head, the thinking part of the person we're talking to, and then we go down into the hands, what they're physically involved with, what they turn their hand to and their mind to support. And then we look at the very heart of the person and how all of this is driven by their perception and their preparation and their performance of the chosen career area they work in. Okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is, when we come into what goes on in your head, is where do you do your best thinking?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question because I found that it depends on what kind of thinking I'm doing. So,
really?
So, for instance, one of the things I love about the work I do is it has a really interesting tension or balance between what I would say kind of quantitative thinking and then kind of creative problem solving and new approaches to what may be a problem that's been around for a long time. So to answer your question, if I have quantitative work, as far as where do I best do my best thinking, I love getting up in the morning and I'm in front of my Excel spreadsheets with a strong cup of coffee. Certainly the morning, I would say, is my most productive time from that perspective. But that said, I found that some of my more kind of creative or aha moments about how to approach something differently come when I'm on my runs. There's something about the rhythm of it, and it's interesting. I'm not many people love to run to music. I don't, because I like the way the creative thinking process happens a little bit differently when I'm in movement and running and experiencing the different physical sensations. Sometimes new ideas and ways of thinking come into my head during my runs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that poses a very interesting question, because when I ask people where they do their best thinking and what drives their thinking, I also want to know is, how do they record their thoughts? Do they have a digital recorder? Do they use pen and pencil? Do they have some kind of approach to collecting what they think about? Do you?
That's so funny, because I've often thought about trying to do some recording as I was running, you know, with my with an iPhone. But I admit I'm a little afraid to do that for fear of falling on my face as I'm running down the sidewalk. But I would say, you know, for me, I still love pen and paper.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about the process of that flows a bit slower than typing on a computer, that allows me to think in a different way. So,
yeah, I get that.
I have both what I would call, my daily to-do list on my computer. But when, for instance, when I go to a lecture, I like taking notes by hand. I love the qualities of the digital, that I can go back and search, I can go back and cut and paste. So I do use that. So I would say I use both.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So here's a question that I really find interesting about the people that I interview. What drives your thinking? Where does your thinking come from? You know, when I ask that, we have dominant thoughts that are progressing through our mind, whether it be spiritual, whether it be social, whether it be economic. But even behind all of that, there is an aspirational thinking. And that's what I'm aiming for. What drives your thinking?
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, the things that come to mind, the social, the economic. And I guess to answer that question, I would say what drives my thinking is my fascination behind what ties together, or how do those pieces come together, social issues, environmental problems, the whole economic piece of it, you know, the natural tension between what I was talking about before, the working on these Excel spreadsheets, this quantitative mm-hmm. piece, mm-hmm. and this kind of more evolving, nebulous, creative problem-solving piece. So I would say probably what drives me is the fascination of how you can bring those pieces together, and then how you communicate that with different people that have many, many different approaches to how they think, how they communicate, and how do you decide how you're going to communicate that piece.
That's very interesting. So you're trying to think how other people would receive what you're thinking about from their thinking perspective.
Right, or how do I best communicate to help them?
Yes, absolutely.
Either solve a problem or even to help them understand what I'm trying to say at times.
Now, you know, I know that you're in a sustainability. And sustainability, when it comes to mind with most people, they go to the old worn-out cliche of the tree hugger.
Yes.
And you and I know that that is so far removed from anything real to your world. And sustainability is one of the most encompassing subjects I've ever been introduced to. And thankfully and fortunately, it was through your tutelage. And in regard to sustainability, if you were to define it, what's the toughest subject inside of sustainability that you actually think about?
Well, you know, one of the things is you touched on right from the very beginning is you said, you know, it's being green or it's planting trees. You know, it encompasses more of that, and there's kind of a classic definition by the UN Brundtland Commission that basically says sustainable development is development that meets today's needs without compromising the future generation's ability to meet needs as well. So there's very much an emphasis on both present but also future. But I think one of the biggest challenges is to think about not just how we're producing and consuming, because that's mm-hmm. very much about mm-hmm. sustainability. How can we produce things? How can we have less waste, use less natural resources? But inside of that question is, how are we changing the way we design things, design processes, so we're not worrying about what we're wasting to the beginning? So in other words, how do we get at the design piece of it? So mm-hmm. we're just not trying to be less bad, so to speak.
Yes.
But then the other little kernel inside that is, do we need to look at the very ways in which we define and measure our progress?
Yes.
You know, what is progress in our society? So that's why it's a big, big, complicated subject. It's not just about planting trees.
Absolutely. And I have more than learned and been introduced to those very ideas from you. What is it that you like to think about the most in sustainability?
What do I like to think about the most? I guess I like to think about how to inspire people to think differently. I mean, just kind of like what we were just touching on. And certainly, you know, Billy, it's been a pleasure to work with you, because you saw things very quickly and made connections very quickly, and that's not always the case. So I guess what I would say is inspiring people about how to approach a problem differently, or to say, I thought that I came into this thinking, oh, it's another thing that's just going to cost me money in my business, mm-hmm. and now I'm learning that not only is this not going to necessarily cost me money, it can actually save me money and make the place where I'm living a better place to be. So I guess instilling that inspiration in people through knowledge.
Well, the very idea of that, in regards to some of the trends and the shiny objects of the internet today, is small business people are trying to figure out how to have a sustainable approach to being online. And many of them realize they can't sustain what they're trying to do because they haven't thought it out. They haven't thought it through. They aren't thinking of the economics. They aren't thinking of the time. They aren't thinking of the resources, which are always more and cost more than most of them are trying to think about.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that I ask people like yourself for your expertise to be on here, that you might get them to drive their thinking better and deeper in regard to these matters, that everything's related. And whenever I'm dealing with a PR executive in Chicago or a social media expert from Tennessee or you from Mexico, sustainable living at the corner of commerce and culture all interacts.
Yes.
And so whenever you talk about that, that's enjoyable.
And I think one of the most gratifying or exciting parts of the work that I do is that, as you said, you know, my saying is sustainability can't be done in silos. So you can work on projects if you don't have the larger scale picture. You can work on specific projects, but you're never going to get the kind of exponential results that you can get if you start bringing together the people that perhaps are currently working in silos and see where what they're doing connects with another part of the business. And there's nothing more exciting than getting a group of people together that sometimes say, okay, well, here it goes. We're just another meeting. You know, this is another one of these meetings. We get together and you get people in a room that have never really talked to each other before. And
I've seen that.
And to watch
with you.
Well, it's really exciting to watch people get excited. Some people who have said, you know, this is the first time, we had lots of ideas, but no one's ever asked for our opinion before. No, we thought that no one wanted to hear it. So sustainability really gives one the excuse, shall we say, to bring people from different parts of the organization or the company and start these conversations going about, hey, what are you doing over there? Oh, well, you know, maybe can we adopt that? Or I didn't even know you were doing that. So that's one of the exciting things about sustainability, is to break down those silos, get people out of their silos, and get them looking at what they may be doing better or what they are doing or could be doing better collectively.
Cool. Well said and well put. And that gives us a chance to change it up a little bit. You're very clear in how you think and what you like to think about and how you record it. And most people tend to think they're best when they're alone, and that's apparent by a lot of people that goes on. And now I want to change it up and move it in a little bit more to what is relevant about how you go about doing your work. Sustainability is getting a little bit more of a positive spin in the world. People are looking at it a little broader. So I want to ask you a question. Today, what brings you the greatest satisfaction in your work?
I would say what brings me, well, there's a couple of things. I guess we can start with the large picture part.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I eat, live, and breathe sustainability in many ways. So my answer will be biased on this, but I feel like, especially last year, we're really starting to see some changes in how, businesses and folks look at sustainability. The Paris Climate Conference, otherwise known as COP21, which happened at the close of 2015. I mean, this was the first time in 20 years of UN negotiations that 190 countries were able to achieve a legally binding and universal agreement on climate change. This is huge. For those of you that may not know, the Paris Climate Change Conference, basically countries came together and said, we're going to make an agreement with the aim of keeping global warming below 2 degrees Celsius. So there was a lot of declarations. There was a lot of folks saying, taking specific actions. And really, compared to other meetings, business was really at the forefront of this. And there was major companies making major commitments about how they were going to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions and what they were going to do. And so what was inspiring to me was to see this movement from, I don't know how much this is going to cost us and can we do this, to what are the opportunities here? So that was very inspiring to me on, I would say, kind of a global level. Mm-hmm. What inspires me in kind of my day-to-day is helping folks strengthen their business and helping them understand that they can do that in a way that is going to benefit the community and benefit the environment, and helping them see and understand through very specific actions how they can do that. So, that may be, in my case, working with a very, very small scale agricultural person that owns a farm in Mexico, mm-hmm. to a larger company that's saying, hey, how can we measure our greenhouse gases that will help us reduce our natural gas use? So even though it's on a very, very different scale, it's really helping using business as a positive tool for change.
Cool. And you get a lot of satisfaction out of that when you see it come together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really, and you can see the results. I mean, you can't see the emissions that come into the air, but when somebody says to you a year later, we were able to reduce our natural gas by X amount, and not only did we save the company money, but we're putting less emissions into the air.
That's great. I really enjoy that because I have firsthand experience of seeing that happen with you in a situation where we were both working together. Mm-hmm. So I have a question for you now in relationship to this. What's the biggest challenge that you personally face in doing what you do?
We touched on that a little bit earlier, is kind of the education piece. Mm-hmm. I do work both in Mexico and in the United States, and I think I have to do a little bit more talking about sustainability. Is a newer concept here in Mexico, in the sense that how businesses can use it as a force for positive change, particularly I would say medium-sized and large businesses. The exciting thing here in Mexico is that there is a very growing movement in people that want to start small businesses that mm-hmm. have both they want to have a bottom line and make money, but they also want to have a positive social impact. So I would say that, that's one of the exciting things that I see here in Mexico. The other part is just, okay, sorry, I'm going to put that on cut.
Sure, okay.
Okay. So the other challenge is the day-to-day of just, I would say just the day-to-day of being a small business owner as well. Mm-hmm. you wear many, many hats, and you have to run a small business, you have many hats to wear, and so, I don't know if you're going to include this in the introduction, but I was a Peace Corps volunteer for 3 years, from 2008 to 2011. And one of the nice things about that is basically you got to do consulting, but you never had to worry about billing your clients or how much you were going to charge. And it was an absolutely liberating experience to be able to say to people, I am simply here to take anything that is in my brain that may be useful to you and just put it on the table. So I keeping that in mind, I still try to keep that ethos as a small business person, in the sense that what's in my brain, I want to be able to take out and be able to put on the table to have people use it in ways that are functional and work for them.
Hmm. So the Peace Corps has helped shape you quite a bit too then, and the practical handwork that you did in those years, as well as what you now currently do in America and in Mexico.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that experience helped me do and continues to this day is to look at current ways of doing things and tools. Mm-hmm. And how do you adapt them in multiple different situations? It could be a situation that somebody does not read or write, but it can also be a situation where this particular tool for a large business needs to be adapted to a small business. So the concept of adaptability and meeting your client where they are, mm-hmm. and working with tools, adapting methods that work for them. That experience that I had in Peace Corps has been very, very helpful for me working with my clients today.
Okay. And how did you end up down in Mexico?
So I ended up in Mexico when I applied to the Peace Corps I came into the Peace Corps in 2008. And I think probably most people, when they think of the Peace Corps, they think of people going to Africa and living in very small communities, which is, of course, is what I thought would happen. Long story short, my recruiter suggested the Peace Corps program, and she said, you know, for your skills and background in business, we think that would be a good fit. So I came to Mexico based on my skills with working with small businesses, and also my experience working, my volunteer experience, because I had done a lot of volunteering in national parks, mm-hmm. and I should say in parks in the Northeast Ohio area. And so I ended up being placed in a beautiful, beautiful national park in Mexico, helping small entrepreneurs strengthen their businesses and create new businesses in lieu of taking things out of the park to sell, in lieu of illegal lumbering. And mm-hmm. so that was my role, and that's how I ended up in Mexico.
A very sustainable beginning.
Yes, yes. And so then,
it's very interesting, because I did not know this.
Yeah, and then, you know, long story short, when I saw what was happening in Mexico and the growth in interest in sustainable supply chains and social entrepreneurships, I decided to stay in Mexico and continue to work in Mexico and in the U.S. In my own small business.
Mm-hmm. And in light of that, I want to ask you a question. What excites you the most about being a small business owner in the field that you're in? Because sustainability really reaches out and grabs everything that can affect anything when it comes to a small business owner. What one thing really gets you? Is it whenever the small business owner sees the process, or a large business owner buys in, or what is it?
Yeah, I would say it's the aha moment when mm-hmm. Either a large business says, oh, you know, I really hadn't been thinking of sustainability in this particular manner. Or the other aha moment often comes with a business person that is looking for a sustainability consultant because they have problems in their supply chain. Or they come to me saying, you know, we have somebody that wants to buy products from us, but we need to do some analysis about sustainability, and we don't know where to start. So sometimes the moment comes just from a need, not necessarily because there's some inherent interest in sustainability, but the real turning point and the, I would say, satisfaction point to me is when there is a situation like that, and then this business owner or the company realizes that, well, not only can we perhaps comply with what our customer wants, we can win new customers with our using sustainability. We can look at our supply chain, and we can have less risk in our own company because we are working with other suppliers that understand what sustainability means. So there's a really kind of, I call it the aha moment when either a very, very small entrepreneur realizes that maybe we could have a business advantage, or some of the larger companies understanding that sustainability isn't just, you know, an employee volunteer day, not that that's bad, but it can actually be a part of their business strategy.
Okay. Well, we know that you apply your hands to all of this and that you've definitely been an outdoors person. I see on your Facebook that you you ride a bike. I'm just changing it up a little bit here.
Okay.
Before we move into the last section. How many miles are you riding on that bike with all your friends?
You know what? That's a really good question. And I don't know because, you know, and then the reason I'm laughing is because there are certain folks that track, you know, where they run, how far they go, how far they ride. And that's something that I've never really done. Even on my runs, when I'm not running quite as much as I used to, but when I used to go on much longer runs, I had running partners that said, well, you know, yeah, let's go for a run, but how long is your route? And I'd say, well, I don't know. I just run in about an hour and a half and that's it. But what I will say is one thing about my biking, just like it's kind of a metaphor in life for me, because you can get out on a bike and you can say, oh, I think I'm going to try to ride 30 miles today. Well, there's a really big difference between riding 30 miles on a long, flat road and riding 30 miles on a very narrow, twisty, hilly trail. So one of the reasons I love to ride my bike is because of some of the unknowns. You know, you can look at a map and you can get a good idea of going or where you're going, but you don't always know. So that's a long answer to your question, but the answer is I don't always know how far I go, but it's really the experience and the ride along the way what matters to me.
How long have you been riding the bike?
Oh, geez. I would say, you know, well, I loved riding my bike as a kid. You know, that's how we got around a friend's house. We rode around the block. And, you know, I always had a bike as a kid. And then I think like many people, somewhere along the line, I just stopped riding my bike, like as a young adult. And it really wasn't until probably 15 years ago that I picked up biking again, and specifically picked up mountain biking. And I just loved it because it got me back into the woods again. And and there's this whole sense of playfulness and being in the woods that biking allowed me to do. I think, you know, one of the things that we're seeing now in certain areas of business is this idea of creative play. And what creative play can do for us as individuals, but also for teams. And so mountain biking is a way to play with for me. And it's a way of bringing back that the kind of youthful enjoyment. So, yeah, I've been biking for about mountain biking for over 15 years. And, you know, mountain biking has taught me a lot about myself, about challenges, about working with other people, and also about giving back. Because when I first started mountain biking, I went out on trails, and you know, I found out that some of them were legal to ride on them, some of them weren't. But and so all of a sudden, I started looking around and saying, "Well, like, well, how did these trails get built, and who's taking care of them?" And you know, I'm enjoying this amenity, but how is it that these trails came to be? So long story short, I got involved with some organizations like local biking organizations and International Mountain Bicycling Association to help learn how to take care of trails and learn how to build sustainable trails. And so that was another really, really wonderful part of my life. And I was able to put that to use here in Mexico in the parks where I work as well. So.
Well, that's sweet. And that is also very telling. Because one of the questions I ask people is, would you do something else if the opportunity arose? But in your case, I don't think there's anything else that really reaches out and grabs you, because you have such a broad palette within what you do to reach out and do many things.
No, that, you know, Billy, that is so true. I think, in fact, one of the challenges of my work is where do I focus?
Yeah.
because it is all encompassing, and I have, you know, I'm so incredibly fortunate that I have many opportunities and many options and many avenues to pursue within sustainability. So, you know, when you talk about challenges in your work, that is one of my challenges is, you know, I have a big whiteboard behind me that has a whole list of professional development and opportunities. So, yeah, being a sustainability professional offers you lots and lots of avenues and opportunities.
Okay, so the bike gave us a chance to find out a little bit more of what you do whenever you're not thinking and whenever you don't have your hands at the wheel. You're thinking and have your hands at the wheel.
Yes.
And now I want to change it up a little bit. And it's a natural progression from where the thinking goes, the hands and the work and that. Now we come down to your heart. And one of the questions that I like to ask right off the bat is, whenever you get down to who a person is, how hard for you is it for you to be yourself? Now, when I say that, most people understand what I'm talking about. And we have to deal with a wide variety of people and under a lot of circumstances. And sometimes the idea of a small business owner is they lose themselves somewhat to try and be all things to all people or other. How hard for you is it to still be Mindy Kuth in all of what you do?
Again, I feel very, very fortunate. I don't think it's that hard for me, but I think it's also because, you know, I made some hard choices about, you know, 10 years ago or a little bit less. I did the thing you were never supposed to do. I was working for a good company. We were going along strong. And I quit my job. You know, I did the thing you weren't supposed to do. And I think, you know, this was about 10 years ago. And I think it's not quite the oh my gosh thing. That's a little more common now. You know, we had a lot of economic problems in 2008 and beyond. But
yes.
I made the decision that I was going to explore what was talking to me from inside. And so I did that. And I did the thing that people say you're never supposed to do, which is quit your job. And I took some time to explore what my insides and what my intellect wanted to do and to bring them together.
Your inner map.
Yeah. And so certainly not that I don't have challenges in being who I am, I do. But you know, one of the great things that I have and feel incredibly fortunate is our choices and options. I have a very, very strong network of both professional network and friend network that keeps me going. And so for you know me to be me. Yes, sometimes being a small business owner, there's a lot going on and a lot to focus on and the pressure to do it all at once. But I would also say that, when you're working in multiple cultures, it often forces you to take a look at who you are and how you're responding to situations and say, you know, is this me? Is this the external culture? So you don't have a choice but to reflect on who you are and how you're doing things, or you won't survive. I mean, or at least I wouldn't have survived.
Mm-hmm.
So the combination of doing some kind of inner searching more than 10 plus years ago and making some very big changes in career, and then also working in multicultural situations really, really makes you look at what you're doing every day, and I think in the end allows one to be who they are.
Well, this is not the normal part of how things go with people in the heart section, because you're definitely unusual in that the multicultural aspect of what you're doing sets you apart, and that's one of the reasons why, as a small business owner inside a very hot topic kind of field in the condition of the world where it's at right now, there are many things that are not sustainable just for people, never mind business or nature. So I want to ask you a question, and you've touched on it a little bit, but what do you do to keep yourself?
Well, I would say, you know, I talked about some of the inner work.
Yes.
But I would also say what helps me keep myself is getting out of my own self, getting out of my own head, and not doing too much navel gazing. I mean, you know, you hear people say, well, you know, you have to do your inner work. And I think that's true. But a large part of that is making sure I'm connecting with other people. And, you know, when I'm asking for advice or counsel, it's great to get it from your best friend or your partner, but I often seek it out. I seek it from people that I know that are different than I am, because I need to hear a different perspective.
Mm.
So I think
that's the kind of thing I'm aiming for. That's the kind of thing I want to know. So you would have a diversity of people that you might go to just check the temperature of yourself a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, not only kind of myself, but, hey, you know, this is my take on X, Y, and Z. And, you know, what's your take on that? Or why do you think this is happening? Or, you know, this is something that, went down in a meeting, and this was, you know, what's your take on that? And so I think it's really important to have people around you that you can relate to, that you can bounce ideas off, and that will support you. But on the other hand, at least for me and my experiences, I know that I need to get out and about and talk to folks that are different than me, that will have a different perspective, because hopefully that helps me not only in my professional life, mm-hmm. when I'm trying to work with different teams, work with different types of group people, different cultures, different perspectives, but also help me on a personal level as well. You know, if I'm working through some issues and I'm doing, say, a little maybe too much navel gazing, mm-hmm. open that up. Mm-hmm. Open that up and get a different perspective.
That's very interesting. And I know that you go to people within your circle for help, and you get help from that. Do you have a location? You've heard me talk about the cylinder of silence and some emails and different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Mark Schaefer about this, and he talked about the favorite place he liked to be was by a stream. Because when he looked at the stream, it made him think in different levels. Because on one level, you can look at the stream as a whole. You can see the water flowing.
Mm-hmm.
On another level, you can look through the water and see the rocks on the bottom. And on another level, you could see the reflection of light and everything off the top of the stream. But you can't see all three of them at the same time, usually.
Yeah.
Is there something or a location or somewhere that you retreat to in your heart, in a location where you sit down and it's not so much navel gazing as it is Like this lady, Kelly LeBrock, says, without the silence, you can't hear the noise. Do you have a place where you go to where it gets quiet enough to where you can hear the noise and filter out what is meaningful and what isn't?
Well, you know, building on the comments of wise folks like Mark Schaefer, I would say being in nature, for sure. And there is a favorite place that I have here in Mexico that has very, very large, beautiful trees. They're called oyumel. They're a type of fir tree. And it's a protected species. They're threatened. And they make, when the wind blows, the most beautiful sound. And so you get this experience of kind of sight of these huge, massive trees. And you get the auditory sensation of the sound of the wind when it comes through there. It's very distinctive. And they also have this beautiful smell. There's a very distinctive smell that comes with the branches and the leaves. So I would say in nature, in that particular forest. And then I'd be remiss if I didn't say, as a kid, I spent a lot of time on a family farm, and I still love that place. I don't get to go back very often, but we've managed to hold on to it and keep a piece of it in the family, and that place is magical. I love that place.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Yep.
And for the audience listening, you start to see a thread amongst the people that we talk to. They all have routines that they've built in that strengthen them, and at the same time they allow for their weaknesses to come at them so that they can have the resources around them to bring them back out. And most of them are outward looking and enjoy some very physical activities, whether it's hiking, riding bikes, swimming, sailing, anything like that. And they all drive and are a part of who they are when it comes to the work that they are engaged with. And it all swims right through their thinking as well in one fashion or another. But now we come down to the last three sort of questions that in the heart of the people that I've interviewed, we get to ask them just three simple questions, and they're always different, and they're always revealing. And maybe this will be the same for you.
Okay.
Have you ever been the recipient of real charity? Now, you know the difference between love and charity as defined by the sage Billy Delaney is, love is an emotion, but charity is love in action. It's love with shoe leather on it. And being in the peacekeeping world, you would know what that means. But have you, Mindy Kuth, ever been the recipient of a real charity? And would you give us an example?
You know, well, the answer to your question is yes. And I think I have been the recipient of real charity when I was very vulnerable. I could have been taken advantage of easily. I probably could have been physically harmed. You know, this is times when I've spent periods in different countries when I was very ignorant of the cultural norms and the rules, and probably ended up going out of the bounds of certain cultural norms unbeknownst to me. And all of a sudden, you don't know it, but you're in over your head.
Yes.
And there have been some people, I don't know who they are, I don't know where they are now, but they helped me. And they may have said, you know, look, you know, you shouldn't be here, I'm going to get you where you need to be. Or I said, you know, being nervous, I'm lost, I'll get you where you need to be. I will help you. Or, you know, maybe it's not that I was lost, but I was trying to find my way there, and I have had people say, I will walk you to the door where you need to be. And and there, you know, no other reason than because they were people that reached out to another human being. So I feel like I have been disproportionately on the receiving end of many, many acts of compassion and charity. And it just, I don't know why. I mean, it's just because there's really people out there that do this, and it's just from their heart. So yes, I would say most definitely.
It affects you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It affects you. It also helps drive who you are. And here's another question, now that you've answered that one so well. Do you have the count them on one hand friendships? And would you give me an example of one?
Yes. I have many incredible friendships. But I'll give you an example of a friendship that is my partner. And he is someone that did not grow up with the same language as I did.
Mm-hmm.
We speak different languages. But I would say one of the things that he has taught me in friendship is how you communicate and how you relate without speaking another's language. And so for me, his friendship has been teaching me patience. That's one thing that is one of my challenges in life. When I see something that I think is important to the universe or to the environment or to the community, I want them to happen. And he has taught me that patience, how to have patience, how to appreciate it in others. And so his friendship has gone through many different iterations with me, and his patience with me, his compassion, and his understanding of other folks, of other people, and how they move through life has taught me a lot. So I would say my friendship with this person has been meaningful to me, because not only has he shown me great compassion in moments of when I have probably been less than a person that I would want to be, he has really, our friendship, he has taught me so much about not only other people, but how to bring out the best and be the best that I can for other people.
Be a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cool. And I could see that you were reaching for the words in this. And whenever we get down into the last three questions, it happens a lot. So I'm not sure that was well answered. You did well. Now here's the last one. And a lot of people, I like them to think about this. And I used to ask them what they think the core ingredient would be that describes them. And now I give them a bit of an out and I say, what would they like the core ingredient to be that other people see in them that would describe them?
So what core ingredient? Well, I would say for me, a core ingredient is curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Curiosity and questioning and the desire to learn. I guess it sounds really corny, but I never want to be a grown up. I'd rather be a growing up person. So I hope that growth process continues my entire life.
So a Peter Pan.
Well, in some aspects, I suppose so. That constant openness to new ideas and continually questioning. Also, I would say continually developing compassion. Mm-hmm. And
I would say that would describe you very well, would be a person of deep compassion.
Well, thank you. I can only hope so.
I think so. I think that I've seen that in you. Now, To wrap this up and let my audience know, you've had a chance to meet with Mindy Kuth, someone who has taken upon her the role of being an ambassador for the planet and the people that live in it, and how to get them to work together to be sustainable. And at the same time, she is also very caring and vulnerable and yet very strong person with fresh ideas and not afraid of living outside of any box that any of us would be comfortable in. And for the last 5 minutes of the show, we always turn it over, or however long you care to take, Mindy, it's quite okay too.
Okay.
To talk a little bit about what might be on your mind in lieu of what we've discussed today, mm-hmm. or something you may have thought about before. So, Mindy Kuth, the floor is yours.
Oh, well, thank you. I think part of what, even thinking about this discussion today, brings to my mind is that it is really important to reflect on what you're doing. I mean, I really thank you for the opportunity for the interview, because it gives one the opportunity, as you're listening to yourself talk, to reflect on a lot of really important things: what you're doing, why you're doing, how you're doing it, mm-hmm. and who's out there listening that hopefully could learn something or benefit from something. You know, I work with multicultural teams. You know, we do projects, implementation, managing, monitoring, and evaluation. And those are all part of my daily life from a business perspective. But then there's also the piece of how does what we're doing today in your business impact who you are in the person, in who you are as a person, and where you're going in the world. And I would say, one of the things that working in the field that I work in, I question myself. You know, here you are as a sustainability consultant. Are you living what you're talking with your clients about? So probably, you know, it's interesting. If anything sometimes, you know, worries me or keeps me up at night is how do you integrate, you know, your personal life and with what you're doing in your professional life, and are they aligned? So, that's something that is important to me, and that I'm constantly asking myself and questioning my own needs, and sometimes making changes in my life because of that. You know, again, how am I measuring value, or how am I defining value, and how am I defining progress, both professionally and personally? You know, for folks that are out there wondering, you know, what is sustainability or how I might apply that in my own life, you know, I would say look at things. You know, there's a saying called the three P's. It's the people, the profit, and the planet. Mm-hmm. And so when you're looking at your daily life, you know, remember the profit piece, but also look at how you're relating to your folks in the office, the people piece. How are you relating to your family? That's a part of sustainability. And then obviously, you know, what are you doing as far as looking at the environment?
Are your actions sustainable?
Yeah, are your actions sustainable?
To connect all the way from Mexico back up to Ohio, here where I sit in my snowy room, and have a chat with you about your life, who you are, what goes on in your head, the work you do with your hands, and how it's driven by the things that take place in your heart.
Well, I really thank you for the opportunity, and it really was a pleasure. And I hope the listeners can get something out of it as well.
Thank you very much. Well, there you are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being with us on Fresh Oil. And that's exactly what you got today, some fresh oil. It isn't the old, and it isn't the same old. Thank you for joining us with Fresh Oil. And we'll call that a wrap.
You've been listening to Fresh Oil with Billy Delaney. Thanks for pressing play.